Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It is
Woohoo!
Monday, February 6th. This is our first Hoops HD, not our first podcast, our first Hoops HD report of February. So welcome to February, everyone that missed our other shows last week. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined up top here by David Dorman and David Griggs. Down below me is Joby Fortson. To his side from Bracketeer.org, we got Rocco Miller back with us, and we got John Stalica. He is on in an Airbnb, according to his notes, or something like that. I'm not sure what's going on there. Looks like the same place you're always from, but maybe it's not. Who knows? This is our Hoops HD report. We're going to go over
I'm
anything
not
that,
at that puppet bunker just yet.
go over anything and everything that's going on in the college basketball. Griggs, you had a comment?
Well, I was just saying he's going. I mean, we're sending Stalika to the puppet bunker this year.
No, we're not. They only allow puppets in the puppet bunker. But anyhow, let's get right to it. We've seen Joe Lenardi from the bracket bunker already the last week or so. So hey, although he did get out to a couple games, so he's not quite locked in. But let's get right to it. We're going to go over all the standings and everything. But I figured I'd start off with another blind resume. Our good friend John Tytel couldn't make it on tonight. I think he's stuck at an airport somewhere. I don't really like stumping
In
him if
Newark.
he.
Oh, what a
But
horrible place to be stuck in.
We'll go a little blind resume here, and I decided to make it a little bit harder this week as well. I've blanked out all the scores
Wow.
too, because quite honestly, some of the scores do make it very obvious who the teams were. So, making it even a little harder, we're just looking at wins and losses and the nets of those teams. And the question, clearly, a couple of bubblish teams here.
Publish.
I'm sorry, I got a little bit of a
Cool.
problem here. The team on the left seems to be incorrect.
I would hope
I was
so.
going to say, I love that team. They've got seven road wins. That's the team.
Okay,
We're
let's try
off to
this
a great
again. We're after another great start. Let's try this again. I think I got a
Like,
slightly
this one
better.
writes
That little
okay,
note
but
that says
man,
auto bid
looks
only.
really bad.
I got a slightly better profile on the left here because I was looking at it. That did not work. Okay,
I don't
no,
think that's a better profile. That's
slightly better profile,
only
I
two
said
road
here.
wins.
Joby, let me ask you here. Look at these two profiles, left or right. Who do you like better?
It's all how you break it down. If you're looking at, hey, didn't stub your toe once, all right, that's great for you, and the team on the left's yours. But if you want a little more, if you want a little more, obviously it's the team on the right, who has a quad three neutral, which against 161, that's kind of ugly. So you have one ugly mixed in, and one need more meat on the left, though. You do.
Not
It's
lots
I'd probably
more.
go with the team on the left because, but it's like it's I go with the team on the left, but it's not like a slam dunk.
Rocco, what do you think? Do you agree
Tons
with
in the
him
back.
to go with the team on the left because there's not the bad, or
Well,
do
I'm
you?
looking neutral. The quad two also is,
Okay.
you have that neutral, you
Yeah.
have a road in quad two.
Oh.
So when you're adding up quad one and two, the guys on the left are more prolific. So
Yeah.
that, yeah, two, definitely left,
You're going
definitely.
left. Rocco,
Yeah.
you're with him
Oh.
on the left?
No.
Well,
No.
so first of all, Chad, you're giving us less information than before.
Yes, I did that
But
on purpose, and you'll see why.
this is a
That
problem.
might be a giveaway in and of itself.
Well, to me, one of the most important things is who did you beat, where did you beat them, and who did you play? And the names of the teams are extremely important because some of the teams, I don't care, like Oral Roberts could be in the top 40, but it's not the same as beating number 77 Wisconsin, right? So
Right.
anyway, I'll digress. I'll just say that, I mostly agree with Joby. I think it's tough because if you want to look at quad records, obviously quad one records awful for the left team. But as you go through and you get to 2A, 2B, 3-4, it starts to even out and they end up being a little bit maybe better.
Yeah, Dorman, you have, I know you have a few thoughts. Do you want to take your first shot at guessing these two teams also?
I'm gonna, just because I'm on the other side of this here, I'm gonna take the team on the right. The one thing that
Yes, the
I love
team
to
on the
see
right.
is I love to see
Nice
teams that like
voting.
can actually beat these other teams that are going to be in the field. On the right side, they beat the 7th overall net at home. On the road, they beat the 19th overall. Those are things not many teams are going to have on the bubble on their resume. I'm going with the team on the right.
Who do you think these are?
I know who they are.
Any guess?
I know who the one on the left is, and it's
Tar
not.
Heels and Pirates.
I know who the one on the right is now.
Wow.
Okay, yeah. The one on the left is should not be taken.
The one on the left is I've heard her talking.
North Carolina, because of what Greg's saying.
North
Carolina. Wow.
I don't even like the Ohio State win. That's what's ironic. I like NC State over the Ohio State win. You know, but I didn't. You know. But man,
on the other hand, I think we get to tier two. I like what Carolina did in tier
hit
two.
It's not a hits of tier one like loss. I'm just going to say that. The way they play, right. So there's no bad losses for Carolina,
but there's no wins against the field besides NC State. I'm not sure they have a win against the field,
right?
No, Charleston two. I like
Charleston's
the UConn.
Like, the bubble.
Charleston's not racked up a ton. They have three, and Memphis is on the very bubble issues.
Above that, you got a Connecticut win at home, and you went to Rutgers and won. Very few people can go to Rutgers and win this year.
I like Seton Hall. Siena and
Seton Hall is clearly better than North Carolina.
I left both these teams out of my bracket this morning. I know that there are people out there that won't grief me on Carolina, but let's get right to the standings here in the ACC. And Griggs, let me give you a few seconds here on it. The Big Duke Carolina game, these teams are 8 miles apart and have only met once in the NCAA tournament.
Never met during an odd numbered year. North Carolina, I mean, Duke, while I don't think that they're a top 25 team and not a protected seed, they're still very, very tough team at home, and they're not.
They're ranked 24 in the coaches.
They're not one of the top. Did you see them tonight? They're not one of the 25 best teams. But at home, they are capable of beating protected seeds. Like, they're tough to beat at home. North Carolina went in there and played well in an atmosphere that's hard to play in. But they didn't win. And you've got to do more than almost beat a team. Your case has to be more than that. And they just haven't done anything. We looked at their resume. Ohio State needs high powered binoculars to even see the bubble. They're so far from it. And that's arguably their best win, is that neutral floor win. I know they have a home win against NC State. NC State, while good, isn't exactly road warriors either. North Carolina just hasn't looked good. It's not just that their profile doesn't look good. They don't look good on the court. And it's one of those teams, and there seems to be one or two of those every year where everybody just sort of clings to them because they expect them to be good in the preseason and won't let go of them. It's time to let go of North Carolina. They're not good.
It's the same thing they did last year. I mean, this is – I think
it isn't, playing, last
and
year,
yeah, it's
last
one game against Duke, but they were legit tourney team. I saw back-to-back games – on Saturday, I saw two teams who were tournament teams in Carolina and Duke. And I saw two teams who weren't, and that god awful, we'll get to it, Mountain West game. Throwing junk teams who can't even play good defense. It's just the offense can't hit a shot.
Joby, say it's the same as it was last year. They had a win over a protected seed last year and got an 8 seed. Without that win, are they even in the field? Because beating a protected seed is not the difference between a 9 and an 8. It's the difference between the bubble and an 8.
Quite frankly, Griggs, there's a lot of season left, including a couple of tough road tests left here for Carolina. So
they're not going to beat a protected seed on the road.
I want to move on.
One left.
Okay, Griggs, I want to move on here. And Rock, I want to go back to you and discuss another team that had a god awful week. And that is the still somehow in first place Clemson Tigers, despite losing at Boston College and then. And then losing at home game against Miami this week. Is this Clemson team really a tournament team right now with that 339 strength of schedule?
I would have them right on the cut line right now, like literally right on the cut line if they were in the at-large pool. They are winning the tiebreakers today, but obviously they're going to have to play Virginia later this year, and they're going to have other tough games down the stretch. So, it's been an incredible story to start 10-1 after, you know, a 2 quad 4 loss non-conference schedule and shaky results throughout. So I have my doubts, like you, Chad, that they'll get to the finish line and make it in. Obviously, Brownell has been a great story. But if you look at their profile in detail, You know, they haven't done a lot of damage outside of Little John. They've gotten all their big wins in Little John. And traditionally, that's always a tough place to play. I'm not trying to take anything away. I love Hunter Tyson. I love PJ Hall. Two of my favorite players in the entire ACC. But I just don't know how much they have beyond them. And I don't think they have a lot of depth on the bench either. So from a basketball point of view, you know, my best guess would be they'll be in the NIT.
All right. Team with a nice week, Dorman, was Pittsburgh, now won three straight games, including winning at North Carolina before that North Carolina Duke game.
Yeah, they're piling up wins against teams that are going to be in the field, which is more than North Carolina can say.
Way more. Right. There are people that have it behind North Carolina. How? Anyway, go ahead, Dorman.
I'm with you. Doesn't make sense there. And then the Duke loss in Durham doesn't bother me. They probably could have clipped West Virginia at home, but they fell flat that day. I like this Pittsburgh team. I think they're going to the tournament. Look at the schedule coming up here. Louisville, Florida State, Boston College. Virginia Tech has turned it around a little, but Pittsburgh win those next three games, and I think you're looking real good.
Joby, I got to go back to you. I know you're up next, but I got to back to you to talk about Virginia and Virginia Tech, because you're the Virginia guy. Your team went and put Fat Tech on the at-large map suddenly too.
Yeah, well, but here's the thing:
can you all do anything right?
This time last week and the bracket show, what I say, Virginia Tech will win the game. I mean, and you could tell because there were some people. I'll just say some people in the desert know very well. They called this one and the old Oak and Bucket battle that the underdog to win. And you've got to really look at that. Virginia Tech, like I said, I feel like I've said the name Hunter Couture over and over again. Once again, he was money, but they are a different team with him. Mutz is able to be more of himself. Padula can actually get free, because you can't just, you know, suffocate Padula. So all of a sudden he had a few open threes that he will make. I think Virginia Tech, it might be too late because they went through that spell without Couture where they lost five games, but in a row. But they are now, I think, the team we all thought they were, which is like a 5-6 seed. The thing is, if you're a 5-6 seed most of the year, but then you have a stretch where you're way out of the tournament, does that knock you out? They're going to be going right to the edge, right to the end. They're not going to make another run in the ACC tournament, I don't think, this year, like they did last year, but they are a team to watch out for.
Well, they do have something, a huge hole in the schedule that Griggs will want to point out, but they have at Notre Dame, at Georgia Tech, at Louisville back left, along with the game at Duke. So they have a chance to get some road wins that they really need.
They can take all those, but they need the Miami game at home.
Yeah. I
really think what they need.
Everybody's going to say they need a big win, and they do. But if you go back to their schedule real quick, they need the small wins too. Like they need
the small road wins.
They need the next three. if they lose one of the next three, that's not shooting yourself in the foot. That's shooting yourself in the gut.
Very true.
You know,
they don't have room for error because of that.
None.
One
more team real quick, and then we'll move on to some other conferences here. But Sleek, I pulled up Miami there on the right. They just come off a win, blowout win at home tonight over Duke right before we started. You on the Hurricane bandwagon here?
It's not just the win against Duke. It's also the win at Clemson that's also knocked the Tigers into a sudden tailspin right here. I mean, I'll have a final thought later in the night when we get to Miami, but the Hurricanes are very much a legitimate team right here. I've been of the opinion that they're probably going to be around a 5 seed or 6 seed for most of the year, and nothing has changed my mind so far on that.
Here's the upcoming schedule. Some pretty big games here. Start with Virginia's week, hosting NC State, hosting Duke. Huge week this week for Virginia.
Well, this is when Virginia determines if they win the regular season title or not. The good news is after the Virginia Tech game, Virginia in the final eight games has 5 of those at home. You're seeing 2 of them. That's a very fortunate thing to get Duke and NC State at home as opposed to the reverse.
Also circled North Carolina this week, after the game at Wake Forest, hosting Clemson, hosting Miami. Clemson does have wins at Carolina, but very, very few of them all time. very, very few. One. But
Just real quick, Chad, this game on Saturday, Louisville, Miami, you don't need to circle that. You can skip that one.
Let's move on, Rocco, to the game out west of the week in the West Coast Conference. Of Woo-hoo! Course, I'm talking about the unbelievable finish of the Pepperdine-Portland game.
Yes.
Oh, if you haven't seen
maybe
that.
I'm talking St. Mary's Gonzaga, either one.
Yeah.
Google that if you haven't seen it. It's incredible.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable. Portland had the game won, and Tyler Robertson threw elbows, and then all of a sudden, anyway, Pepperdine won on a miracle inbounds pass, basically a one-timer, using a hockey reference there on the inbound pass to put it in. But, Gonzaga, St. Mary's.
Real quick, I just want to point out that St. Mary's and Gonzaga played this week, but that ending was so incredible. Even though neither team is anywhere near the NIT, that's what we started with. Thank you.
Exactly. Yeah. it really was. It's an all-time for sure. And by the way, Pepperdine's first win of the WCC season. Pretty big deal for Coach Romar. But I'll digress and talk about the highlight, which was the game in Moraga Saturday night. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it last minute. I had something come up. But the game itself, I rewatched it, and just unbelievable. St. Mary's down 8 pretty late, rallied back, got the thing into overtime. I think the entire country now knows about a little player named Aiden Mahaney, who I've been talking about since opening night when he went for 20-plus against Oral Roberts. It's a really fascinating story because he's, you know, a somewhat scrawny, like 18-year-old kid from down the hill in Lafayette, which is like the neighboring town of Moraga. He made so many clutch baskets late. It's not like he just did that against Gonzaga. He's done that in 5 or 6 other games. He's won WCC Freshman of the Week, I think six times at least, maybe 7. They get the thing into overtime. They win the game by 8. St. Mary's now in an unprecedented 2-game lead over Gonzaga. So despite having to go there on the final day of the season, they've got a chance to take care of all the other business, and then they'll win the championship either way for the regular season, which is an absolutely unbelievable deal, because I think Gonzaga's run is 20-plus years of WCC regular season championships. So regardless of the NCAA implications, I think that alone is such a huge deal out here that I want to recognize that.
Don't overlook this next game, though, at Loyola Marymount, Rocco. Obviously, the team that won at Gonzaga. So this LMU game could be very dangerous for St. Mary's this week.
It could be, but LMU honestly looked terrible last week. Like, they went back to, like, bad LMU. San Diego. A shorthanded San Diego team, down 2 starters. LMU lost to them. They got destroyed at BYU. So I don't know. You never know. I guess you don't know with LMU. I was high on them for a week. Now it's like I couldn't be colder.
Okay. Right, Let me ask you, hold on a second. Dorman, you had a comment first, and then we'll go to you, Griggs.
I couldn't have been more impressed with St. Mary's, and something the fans and the kids and the students, they said, we got bigger. We're going to win bigger games this year. We're not even rushing the court. You go ahead, Indiana, Bloomington, rush court. We're going to save this because we got a lot more big games this year. I thought St. Mary's really played just the way they've structured their whole season. Coach Randy Bennett's done an incredible job. The freshman guard, I agree with Rocco, is awesome, tremendous. If he was at Kentucky or Duke, they'd be talking about him every night. Great work by Randy Bennett. St. Mary's is for real.
I got to say that I'm with you also for one thing you just mentioned, Dorman. I think it's more insulting these days to not storm the court when you beat a very good team than to storm a court, because it sends that message of, oh, we expected to beat you.
Yep.
Go ahead, Griggs.
Right. Well, I disagree. I don't think they should get credit for the win because they failed to storm the court. It shouldn't count.
They stormed it. They stormed the court last year, and I think that's part of why they didn't storm it this year.
Yeah. Well,
and Gonzaga was a lot better last year. Let's be honest.
John Titel is not here. He guesses the real committee. What he does is different than what most of the rest of us at Hoops HD do. He had St. Mary's ahead of Gonzaga. Chad, can we go back to the two profiles? Because I know we got Joby and Rocco here who also forecast the committee. This debate is fascinating to me, just as a case study, whereas it looks to me Gonzaga certainly has the stronger profile. It certainly tops out higher. But when you look at the head-to-head and what they've done against similar opponents, which is the conference, St. Mary's has outperformed them in that regard pretty clearly so far. So where do you go? I know they say the committee doesn't look at the conference standings. Well, they do and they don't, and they can if they want to. And I think all of us having done the exercise realizes the committee can use whatever tools they want to measure the teams. And that's a fair way to measure a team, is where they stand at a balanced conference. So who do you got?
Well, Griggs, the J&G, which, you know, is going purely by numbers, including conference leadership, which gives St. Mary's the advantage. Right now, that Alabama win is just screaming, and Xavier's now a 3 seed. So that is what's keeping Gonzaga up on the 4 line. But we're talking, they are 15th on my seed list, where St. Mary's is 17th. That a lot rides in that final game in Eastern Washington. Later in the tournament itself. I think the winner, if St. Mary's can win one of the final two, even, I think St. Mary's will be ahead of Gonzaga, and they could be. There was a lot of talk, discussion behind the scenes, whether could St. Mary's really be a protected seed? Yes.
I gave them one this morning as well. Well, Griggs, I had the teams back to back, 16 and 17. And when you have teams back to back and they played head to head, I think the tiebreaker is simple in that case.
Yeah, I stand corrected.
It was at St. Mary's court, and that's why I want to, in overtime. So that's why I want to see what happens in the kennel.
It was overtime, and you know, St. Mary's plays in a very intimate setting. So both teams do, really. Very intimate. So it's hard to win there. And St. Mary's didn't lose to anybody there last year. So, I generally agree with what Joby said. The wins over Xavier, Michigan State, and of course Alabama are a little bit different than what San Diego State win that St. Mary's has out of conference, which is really their only one to speak of outside of Moraga. And so I think, you know, right now, in my opinion, from 13 to 18 on my seed list, all of them are worthy of a protected seed, but you can only take 4. And I still have St. Mary's 18th. I like the other options just a little bit better. But okay, that's going to change over time.
Okay, real quick, Gonzaga hosted San Francisco BYU this week, St. Mary's at Loyola Marymount, at Portland, but we are, at the rate we're going here, we're going to be on a 5-hour show, guys, so we've got to kind of pick up.
Isn't that what we booked?
Let's jump over to the Big Ten Conference, and Sleek, let me start with you here. The Indiana-Purdue game was the highlight game, I think, this week. Indiana taking Purdue down for the second time this season, and despite that, though, Purdue does remain number one in both polls.
It's the first time they played, Jen.
The only time Indiana has lost at home all year was against Northwestern, when the Hoosiers had a couple injuries to deal with. Now that they've gotten the healthy roster, they were able to have kind of one of those games where everything goes right and they're able to knock off the Boilermakers here. Purdue has done enough that I don't think it's going to jeopardize them just from one game from being the overall number one right here. It certainly does give Indiana a boost in the arm after having a midweek loss against Maryland on the road.
Yeah, and Dorman, another team with a very good week, was my Rutgers Scarlet Knights. Blew out Minnesota at home as expected, but a nice win in Madison Square Garden over Michigan State, although NCAA is going to treat that as a home game for Rutgers.
I don't care where they play. They look great. I thought the intensity – I like the idea of playing that game in the Garden. It was electric. I thought it was great. The TV announcers were telling me it was sold out. I love games in the rack. Don't get me wrong, Chip, but I thought it was a nice move there. Rutgers is looking as good as can be. This team has shot up my board over the last 3 or 4 weeks. They're looking really strong. I love Coach Pickle, what he's done there. But the bottom of the conference is really shooting themselves in the foot. Northwestern goes into Madison yesterday and knocks them off. Wisconsin, to me, Ohio State, both on the outside looking in today. The Big Ten, with some of these teams, has a lot of work to do if they're going to get these other teams in the tournament.
Not to mention Penn State shooting themselves in the foot with a Nebraska loss.
They're out too.
Joby, let me ask you this. I think it may be a little bit too early, but is it time to start looking at the Michigan Wolverines suddenly?
Oh my gosh, Chad, it's crazy because, and the reason why is because Michigan has recently gone above that Rubicon of selection that Wisconsin's below. They are a quad one road win, a quad two home win, vice versa. And at least in the J&G, they were dead and buried. They were a CBI like in the 80s. Now all of a sudden they find themselves, as you can see, looking right, you know, look at their profile. Holy moly, they're right in the thick of it, you know, at 55, you know, that's second four out territory. I think they need to do a lot more, but they've kept themselves in the game because unlike Wisconsin, unlike Ohio State, unlike Penn State, they have a winning record in the Big Ten, and they still have a Nebraska game coming up this week. So they have opportunity. They have to take advantage of the opportunity, but yes, they can do it. One of these Big Ten teams that we're naming at this stage is probably going to be in a first four game. You know, right now I say it's Wisconsin. It could wind up being Michigan very easily.
And yeah, Rocco, I pulled that Wisconsin profile up here on the right. And, you know, I keep looking at it, and I just love the wins at Marquette, who I have as a top, as a protected seed, a win at Iowa, a win over USC, a win over Maryland. And the metrics are just aren't there for them, and now they're 13-9 overall. I don't know what to do with this team, honestly.
Yeah, it's a yo-yo effect, and it's what I call the 500 game because, you know, today they are obviously under 500 in the league, which isn't that important for selection. But I think at 13-9 in Division I games, you know, you can ignore the five quadrant four wins, and then you got a team that's 8-9. So when they're, you know, before the loss to Northwestern, they were 8-8, and I was okay with that. I put them in the first four. Once they're 8-9 in games that matter, it's a little harder to select them. And unless, you know, obviously the things you love about Wisconsin, it's different than most of the bubble team, is that they won at Marquette. They won at Iowa. They've done damage on the road, unlike most bubble teams. A neutral win over USC is pretty nice as well. And so, you know, the Badgers can, if they can guide the ship all the way to the finish line and get back to that 500 mark or above, I think I'm going to like them. You know, probably a first four at that if they're right at 500 like they were last weekend. But I think that's the biggest challenge they have. It's that simple if you're a Badger fan. And I've looked at their future schedule. All their biggest games ahead are at home. So if they handle their biggest games ahead on their home floor, they're going to get in. The road games are, I think all the remaining road games are against non-tournament teams. Still going to be hard because it's on the road, but the Badgers' work is very, I think it's very cut and dry. It's very straightforward.
Yeah. Fascinating week for them this week at Penn State, at Nebraska, not games that we're going to be circling, but games that they really got to win. And they got to, because with those two wins, changes this profile a lot. Those are tier one, tier two road wins.
Yeah, in the you know, the low-hanging fruit a little bit. I know we just talked about Michigan, but Michigan, if you're a tournament team, you have to beat Michigan at home, don't you? I mean, shouldn't you be expected to do that?
You can't,
so their next three, yeah.
At worst, they could split.
Yeah.
Yeah, Griggs, in that example, like if you're a Big Ten team, the answer to that question is a little different because you have so many big games. Like a home game against Michigan is just like another walk in the park with your dog. You know, it's not like this special experience. So they have like a ton of big games. And so at that point, you're playing this 500 game. Are you a winning team or not? If you are, we're going to take you. If you're not, you're going to the NIT.
Yeah. That's why I said they had to win against Michigan.
Here's the upcoming schedule, and it's absolutely fascinating to me that we are in February, right? And the two biggest games on the entire Big Ten schedule, I believe, both involve my Rutgers Scarlet Knights. Tomorrow night at Indiana, Saturday at Illinois, huge games. Iowa at Purdue Thursday, also another big one there. But this game tomorrow night, Rutgers at Indiana, absolutely huge for both teams. It's probably one of the best games in the Big Ten season so far. But let's keep things rolling right over to the Big 12. And Joby, I know you wanted to start by talking about the team that's sitting there in seventh place at 5-5, but the red hot Oklahoma State Cowboys.
They have won 5 of 6. The one loss is in Austin to that team that I'm sure someone's going to talk about who is knocking on the door of a one seed in their place. Yeah, one of the wins was over Ole Miss. It doesn't count, but you're 5-5 in the Big 12. That's five marquee wins, almost no matter how you slice it. They are cruising right now. All started Bedlam, too, going on the road, the same place Alabama had just come away getting trounced. And you go on the heels of it and go into that place, win it. Oklahoma State was where Michigan, you know, we were talking about Michigan just a few minutes ago. Oklahoma State was that team about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And or 2 weeks ago, and now Oklahoma State, as of today, knocked out those Clemson Tigers in the J&G Field and are the last team in from Lazarus, is what we might want to call them.
Yeah, they are really hot right now. What is it, four out of five, five out of six, whatever they've won? I think it's five out of their last six.
Five out of six.
Five out of six, including the Ole Miss game, yeah.
Yeah, if they go 5-1 in their next six, they're so far inside the bubble that we're not even debating it. Like, they're probably in the top half of it.
But you know what? It's interesting. 5-5, and they've not yet played Texas Tech at all season, the last place team. So, I mean, if they could sweep Texas Tech – that's seven wins right there. One more gets you to 500 in conference for the season.
And in this league, I think we don't agree on many things.
As oh, no, 9-9 is 500. I'm sorry. 9-9.
Yeah, I think we agree that this league is fairly good.
It is fairly good. And let's see here. Dorman, Kansas, an interesting week. Huge win over Kansas State, then goes to Iowa State and loses.
Yeah, not only lost, but got run out of the Hilton Coliseum. Iowa State was on fire Saturday, really played well. Kansas, I wasn't high on Kansas as the group was last week during our bracket rundown. I got them a few pegs below those three losses in a row. A lot will tell me a lot I will learn tonight. They got Texas at home. If they can hold serve here at home, I know they're going to Austin in a few weeks. I can move them back up to the one line, but this is a big game for me here.
Yeah, and they are actually up 12 as we record this early in the first half, so that's good news for Kansas fans. But Rocco, on the right there, I pulled up the Baylor Bears, and this is a team that I think has a chance to really excel now that they got Jonathan JTT, whatever we want to call it, back healthy, and he actually didn't look that bad in the game against Texas Tech over the weekend.
Yeah, no, he looked great shooting the three a little bit. Got a nice email from our buddy John Titel about that. I like the Baylor profile so far. I think, those neutral court wins against UCLA and Gonzaga are just going to really carry water all the way through to March. They are very impressive now in terms of, you know, getting them up to four quad 1A wins. They're obviously winning the majority of their games in each and every measurable from Q1 all the way through. And I also like the fact that, metrics wise, you never know. There's 12 committee members, Chad. I think that's important to remember. So there's going to be, it's a beauty pageant. There's going to be guys like Griggs on the committee that might care about things that I don't care about, but there's going to be guys like me and Joby that care about similar things that I care about. And so no matter what
I can guarantee you, nobody cares about the things that Griggs cares about.
Everybody should care about the thing.
Well, Rocco, we'll have a very, very harsh discussion about a particular conference.
Right. Yeah. And that's a good experience. You know, we all learn from it. So my point about Baylor is you look at all these different criteria so far. I think they measure out well in almost every category. And I think, you know, with the arrow shooting up, you know, predictive metrics right now, they're averaging out about a 9 in resume. They're averaging out about a 9. So they're right on the cusp of just waiting for one of the teams in the 2-seed area to fall. And then they'll take that last 2-seed. So, the arrow is shooting up, and you know they're a very tough out for any opponent.
Let's take one more look at one more bubble team here at Stalika, West Virginia. This is a team that, I guess, when we look at the metrics, we all want to kind of find a way to put them in, but they just keep piling up losses and are now 3-7 in conference.
I think if we're talking about the losses again, they're all going to be against Quad 1A right here.
Incredible losses. What they did recently.
Yeah. Losing a TCU that's suddenly a little bit shorthanded. Not the most ideal thing to be doing, but fortunately they did take care of business rather decisively against Oklahoma, who's also starting to creep away from the bubble themselves because their record's getting closer to 500. But if you're West Virginia, where do you get those wins? Iowa State, Texas Tech, Oklahoma State should be winnable at home. Kansas State, hopefully not too much of a reach state right there. I still think they need to get at least one more road win here.
I see one remaining winnable game, and Texas Tech has started to play a little better even. So who knows? That's the tough thing. On the other hand, this team could go 500 in this remaining schedule too, and find themselves in the tournament.
Great. Yeah, I think the magic number is 8. If they can get to 8 total or 5 more total wins, 8 conference wins, they've got those remaining games, and then they've got probably an opening round Big 12 tournament game, which should be winnable. If they can find a way to win 5 more, I think the committee will take them, just because there are no bad losses and the top of their resume is so good, and you want to take a team like that. And one of the things, when you're in a league like this, and we've seen this before, although maybe not to this extent, you have good teams that are just unable to win games, because West Virginia, I think, on the floor is a top 40 team. They're somewhere between 30 and 40, but there's 6 teams in this conference that are potential protected seats.
I think dare say, if they can get to 7-11 in the regular season, I think they get a bid.
You got to keep in mind,
and your first round loss better be one of those protected seats, not to Oklahoma.
If they're 7-11, they'll be playing. They'll be 7th, 8th, 9th, or 10th, and they'll be playing in that opening round. But that I think they got to win.
I disagree. Yeah. I won't hold it up, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay. This is going to be a fascinating case for the committee. Yeah.
Let's get things moving here. Here's the upcoming schedule. Texas, Kansas, going on as we speak. In terms of what else to circle for this week in the conference, it's every single game there, as it is every week. There's just day after day of just incredible games here between TCU, K-State tomorrow. We got Kansas State who's Kansas State playing? Actually, Kansas State's playing Texas Tech. We got Baylor, TCU next week. We got Oklahoma, Baylor, West Virginia Tech. Let's just move on to the Big East, though. Yeah. Dorman, Marquette continue to pile up wins here. They knock off Villanova and Butler this week, and they're sitting there tied for first place with Xavier, and I think they're the best team in the conference, in my opinion.
Yes, sir.
I agree. I think a lot of the teams in the Big East have shown some of their issues lately in the last couple of weeks, except this Marquette team. I said it last week. I love what they're doing on offense. They are really strong on offense. They hit big shots. They shoot the three really well. And then under Shaka, they're just playing tight in your face defense, and they get enough stops to where their offense can shine. And I see this continuing. This isn't a fluke. A lot of people think this is not really as good of a team as it's showing. I disagree. I think Marquette's a top protected seed come March.
And Slika, your team, the Xavier Musketeers, huge, exciting overtime win over Providence this week as one of their two wins. But there they are, tied for Marquette, at least.
I did tease it last week during bracket rundown, how they did during the first two games without Zach Fremantle was going to be key right here. Jerome Hunter has become sort of an unanticipated hero right here. Even coming off the bench, he had been one of the most improved players in the country under Sean Miller's coaching. And now what he's doing as a starter, he's getting opposing post players in foul trouble. He's actually hitting from a decent clip from the free throw line. I mean, our fan base will still cringe every time he goes to the arc, because he had the green light last year from three-point land for some reason, but that has not been the case for the Musketeers this year. And in some ways, I'm starting to wonder, they might have a little bit of a better defense with Hunter in the lineup here. So if I'm Marquette in about a week or so, I would not take the Musketeers for granted at home.
Yeah, off until this weekend when they're at Butler, and then the huge game next week at Marquette. Marquette's got two games at UConn and at Georgetown before then. Just real quick in terms of the rest of the conference, Rocco, Creighton has been the other story here, and just how well this team has suddenly been playing like the team we thought they were going to be heading into the season.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, the easy explanation is the Kalkbrenner situation. Once he got fully back, Creighton's been fully back. And, you know, even in their loss to Arizona in the Maui championship game, he was not 100% healthy, even though he played. That's per the radio team I've talked to. So anyway, Creighton's, if you filter by the last 6 weeks of basketball, maybe 4 weeks of basketball, Creighton's number five in the country performance wise. So none of that surprises me. They had all sorts of hype in the offseason. This is the team we thought we were getting. And I expect them, you know, they're going to fly under the radar. Possibly they're, you know, we'll see how it plays out. They got chances for more big wins, but they could land as a 4 or 5 seed, even if they stay hot, and then catch people off guard in the tournament still. So it's a great position if you're a Creighton fan or a player or a coach. Anybody in that community, it's a good situation.
Here's our upcoming schedule. Very good team. Yeah, here's our upcoming schedule. Marquette at UConn, big game tomorrow night. This UConn team finally got a couple of wins. They're both road games. They're at DePaul and at Georgetown, but they finally got a couple of wins at least.
Yeah, how about
UConn the team, Creighton this weekend too?
Yeah, how about the team Creighton's playing on Wednesday? Seton Hall is becoming deceptively good. Like
we
they're
started
sort of,
the show. That's why we started the show with them, Griggs. Yep.
Yeah, I know. We started the show with them.
But yeah, the Seton Hall team definitely right there on the bubble, getting towards the bubble at least right now. They beat Creighton at home Wednesday. It's going to be something to really talk about. Let's try to keep things rolling though here and jump over to the Pac-12. Dorman, you are an Arizona guy. Found a way to get a pair of wins over the Oregon teams this week. So you know, remains there, gets half a game behind UCLA right now.
Yes, the Oregon game was revenge. They went to Eugene a few weeks back and absolutely got crushed. And they had a coach had the team's focus. Tubelis was just flat out amazing. He was unstoppable scoring. He's a really deceptively fast for a big. He really gets down the court. And if the defense doesn't get back right away, he's down there and he's ready to score. Then he does it also on defense. He was helpful defense down low. He got some boards. And when he's really rolling like that, Balo, the other big, the center, it also gets his thing done because there's boards to be had and there's little offensive rebounds, defensive boards that are there, and he just takes it home and flushes them down. The bench also stepped up for the first time in a while. Arizona's bench looks much better the last 3-4 weeks with Pella Larson moved to the bench. He's really come in and provided a spark. Arizona's looking strong. The last test will be the LA schools at the end of the year.
Right. Joby, if you look just at net, a quick glance at this conference, you say, okay, well, I've got this whole pile of bubble teams there, USC, Utah, Oregon, Arizona State. Do we really have that, or is there just only one team here in USC?
Well, it's where the net is faulty. I mean, the net, I think, is pretty accurate, though. I'd reverse UCLA and Arizona's rankings on that net, you know, almost exactly. USC's not the 51st team. They're well inside the bubble. I like this USC team. I think they are a tournament team. They showed it in Los Angeles against their crosstown rival. And they have that, you know, they are easily, I think there are going to be 3 Pac-12 teams. That's it. But USC, but none of them are going to be in a play-in game. USC, I think, will continue to do well. They need to take care of business. They need to beat the Oregon schools on the road. They need to win in the mountains. But as long as they take care of business, like I think they will, USC is a solid team in. Then the rest of the guys. Sorry, Utah. Game over. Lose to Stanford? Come on, man. Yeah, you know, I think Oregon could maybe do something, you know, but they need to win the USC game. But I just don't see it happening.
We are totally going to the wrong screen. Yeah. There it is. Totally wrong screen there. Let's go over here. I was going to say here that the fascinating week this week ahead, given that Arizona's at Cal and Stanford and should win both their games, is UCLA and USC going to Oregon and Rocco. Does Oregon still have a chance to get on the map if they can win one or maybe even both of these games this week?
I think so. I mean, the problem for Oregon after this week is that they'll have 5 non-tournament teams to finish. But I think if they get a sweep, of course, they're back in the mix for sure. If they split, then they're starting to get interesting. They're kind of just sitting on the outskirts right now. So they need at least one of the wins, of course, to get our interest. And then we'll see how it plays out from there. I'll also mention that Utah, because they do have the Arizona win to anchor with, they will have a huge set of opportunities, four games, which is amazing, to go to both Arizona schools on the road, host both the LAs. One of the best home court advantages anywhere in the country is both at Utah and at Colorado. So getting to host the LA schools provides at least opportunity for the Utes. Not saying they're playing great, but they do have one of the best defenses. And I think they have the third best defense in the Pac-12. So if they can get it rolling like they were earlier this year, they got a chance.
Okay. Yeah. Let's jump over here.
One more quick note on USC, just real quick. I agree with Joby. They're pretty good. If they were in another conference like the Mountain West, I think they'd be fourth or fifth. So that's pretty good.
SEC. Dorman, over in the SEC, there are four teams left in the country that are undefeated in their conference. St. Mary's, who we talked about earlier, was one of them. Oral Roberts and Eastern Washington are two others. And then we have Alabama, amazingly now 10-0 in SEC play.
Which is incredible to me, because I think the SEC after the Big 12 is just incredibly deep and strong, but they keep passing test after test. When they forgot to show up, it was out of conference at Oklahoma a few weeks ago. But they are a focused group when Nate Oates takes the court against the conference. They got a couple of huge games coming up in the next 2 weeks. But I couldn't be more impressed with this Alabama team.
And Arkansas, Joby, had a huge hole in their profile that they did not have any road wins. Yeah. They picked one up, although it was at
South Carolina
by 2 points.
It sounds so Griggsy, but yes, they didn't have a single road win. It was just kind of disgusting.
They still don't.
I don't care if it is at South Carolina, because guess what? The South Carolina team has actually beaten a tournament team, as we all know, because I do have Kentucky in my field. So it's not like they beat the sister of the poor, so to speak.
No, they did.
Disagree. But Arkansas is by no means safe, but they are a much different, much better position team. Everybody that I see has them as like an 8 or 9. I disagree. I think they're a 10 hanging by their fingernails to stay off the 11s line.
Yeah. Okay.
But that without a road win, they at least can get rid of that, weight off their shoulders of having to carry that bad, bad mark of them on them.
Stalika, over on the right there, I pulled up Texas A&M. Team is tied for second place, 8-2 in conference, and I'm still not certain that they're in at the moment. In fact, I'd have them out.
Well, they've got two of their toughest games coming up towards the end of the year. Thankfully, they'll be at home to at least take on Tennessee and Alabama. You better win at LSU. You could really use a win at either Missouri or Mississippi State. I mean, granted, Missouri is on the good side of the bubble right here, but Mississippi State, your bubble buddies, you don't want to be passing up chances like those right there. And you definitely, if you can pop the Arkansas balloon, bombs away.
Yeah. Rocco, I want to ask you about a pair of bubble teams. And I don't know if these are anybody's board or not, but with Florida and Mississippi State, they just don't want to go away, despite the fact Mississippi State 3-7 in conference, Florida off that huge win over Tennessee this week as well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Mississippi State's just had a wild year. They started 11-0, and then they lost 8 out of 9. and now they're back. And so, obviously Jan
kind of like the clap.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, you have to look at the whole results. You're trying to figure out what kind of team this is, but I think they're right in the mix right now. I've got them in the last four out. So they're closer to than Florida, just because the non-conference damage they did, they got the TCU and the Marquette wins and they got Missouri now in conference. A neutral Utah win isn't bad. And an Akron win is actually not bad either, who's dominating the MAC. So so Mississippi State's right there in the mix. For Florida, it's simple. I'm close with those guys. I talk to them all the time. They got to get road wins. They got the big home win And, you know, that's their only quad one win so far. But I think if they can keep playing well, they're going to have their next game's at Alabama. I think that's coming up on Wednesday. And then they've also got a trip to Arkansas later this year. There's going to be some other mixed in chances. And honestly, the better Mississippi State plays, the better for Florida, because they wanted the hump. So, you know, if they're going to anchor off that, they can get a collection of Q2 wins. They'll still go to Vandy and Georgia. So if they can get those, there's a few different routes for Florida, I think. But they just got, obviously, the name of the game for them is just keep winning.
It just boggles my mind that I'm looking at Mississippi State here in 11th place at 3-7 in conference, and looking at teams above them in conference standings, including Texas A&M, Florida, even Georgia, Vanderbilt above them in conference standings. Yet I like Mississippi State better than any of them.
Yeah, it's a 14-team league, Chad.
This is what happens when you get home and homes.
Yeah, it's an unbalanced schedule. So you got such a wide variety of challenging schedules or not challenging.
Yeah, in the case of A&M, I almost think they're Mississippi State inverted. Like, they started off not going 100 miles an hour, but they're picking up speed. And if you look at the rest of their schedule, I think whether they belong in or not will be crystal clear by the end, one way or another.
All right, good point. Let me ask one more question, Dorman. Auburn on the right here. I don't know. Is this team really any good? I don't really know if they are.
I'm starting to think it's phony. I really am. Very interesting game. We happen to have them up here, but it really is. They're going to Texas A&M later this, I think, tomorrow night. That is a huge game for both sides. I'm with you, Chad. I'm not so sure Auburn is all that. They could easily lose an A&M. Then they get Alabama and Missouri at home. Another two tough games. This schedule for Auburn is relentless down the stretch. We're going to learn a lot about Auburn before we get to the conference tournament here.
But what did we learn, Joby, in this game over the weekend at Tennessee, where, you know, I mean, there was a non-call at the end, and it was a 46-43 awful.
I'm going to cede the comment to Stalika, because I think he said it better than anyone else.
Stalika?
Yeah, both Auburn and Tennessee should be referred to the Hague for crimes against basketball. I'm glad I was at Xavier and did not have to witness what happened in Knoxville between those two right there. And I don't know if that's going to have much of a carryover for the Tigers when they go to A&M, because both teams are going to be desperate.
Right. Upcoming schedule here, Auburn at A&M, Arkansas, Kentucky, a couple big ones tomorrow night. We've got a few other big ones here, including the Iron Bowl on Hardwood here, Alabama, Auburn on Saturday. What else are we looking forward to? Missouri, Tennessee.
Mississippi State, Arkansas. Arkansas.
Yeah, this is a good one. Saturday,
South Carolina, Ole Miss, you can skip that one.
Over the American, we're up to here. Stalika.
Oh, Houston.
Houston.
Memphis.
Struggled at Wichita. Struggled, and despite the final score, they were down at halftime at Temple, but they found a way to win a couple games at least, Houston. But they're not really blowing everybody out of the building by any, or they're
for better or worse. This is starting to become on brand for the Cougars right here. It's almost like watching Virginia in a much worse conference right here. I'm glad at least the Cougars were able to finally blow away the Owls in the second half, because you certainly don't want to be swept by Temple going into March right here.
Right. And over here on the right, Rocco, I pulled up Memphis. Lost to Tulane. How damaging is that for their profile?
Yeah, it hurts for sure. But, you know, we're talking about a team that they don't have a quad four loss, at least. And they're getting closer to the cut line. I've got them as my best number 11 seed this morning. So they're getting close to that first four group. But I do still like their results, you know, with the Auburn neutral win. You know, I think booting at Cincinnati is a big deal. I think only two teams have done that. But yeah, I mean, they've got a nice cluster of Q2 and Q3. It's a whole lot different than comparing them to Big 10 and Big 12 teams.
Let me ask you this. If they win everything but lose the two Houston games, is that enough?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. They're in now.
You don't think they have to beat Houston
to
make the tournament?
No, just no more like home losses like the Tulane loss, I think would be preferred.
There are actually three teams that have won at Cincinnati.
Okay, there you go.
Xavier won there as well, yes.
Even a NIT level Central Florida team, you can't lose to them at home without a Houston win.
Yeah, they're playing each other coming up. So
right, that's they got to win that game. And that's a game they could lose. So
absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, the bigger thing about the American is these teams, I mentioned it several times, are all built to match up with Houston and be physical and tough. And whoever can get to the tournament, ideally for the league, it's at least Houston and Memphis, maybe surprise third team. But I, you know, it's hard to foresee that. I think it's going to serve them well in the tournament. I got a hunch that they're going to be a lot tougher than teams from other leagues.
Week, Houston is hosting Tulsa, while Memphis is at South Florida, then hosting a very game Temple team that we've seen been playing very well the last few weeks, sitting there actually in a tie for second place with Tulane and at least in the loss column, Memphis. Last but not least for the night, Joby.
Yes, look at this league.
You want to talk about all of them. I know you love this league so much.
Now, I'm going to focus in on Boise. Pull up the resume, put them side by side with Griggs' favorite team. Because guess what? Boise is in so many. They're a nine seed. No, they're not.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. They beat an NIT A&M team. Way to go. Nevada, only UNLV. Because in Nevada shouldn't be in the field, but they're in most fields. Nobody else. Empty. And not next to San Jose State. Put them next to North Carolina.
You said his favorite team.
Yes.
Carolina doesn't have a South Dakota State loss, but an NC State win at home is better than a Nevada win at home. Equal, done. Sorry. It's both teams shouldn't be an 8 seed or a 9 seed where people are seeding them. I will be the first to say it. But man, Boise looked awful. Just eye test. I've watched them now play a number of times. And I've watched San Diego State play a number of times, and it's not good basketball, people.
Oh, it's great.
And I'm not saying not good basketball from the Virginia fan who plays ugly basketball but wins. I'm saying these teams are going to get smoked. And the best example of it is the entire conference of the five teams that are discussed about, oh, they could get a bid or not, Utah State and up. Do you know how many tournament teams they have beaten outside conference? How many tournament teams? One. Now, it's a good team. It's a good win. New Mexico over St. Mary's. And I like St. Mary's. And I like Gonzaga. So this isn't a West Coast bias thing. I like both of them where they are, 4 and 5. But besides that, nothing. This conference, I don't understand their nets. They're phony. This conference is doomed to failure. And you know what? The committee will not be placing Boise as a 9. They will get an 11. In a playing game.
Joby, right? Send me your address so I can send you an eyewash station.
Yeah. Go ahead and pull the profiles back up here because you're overlooking something on Boise State. They've got the win at UNLV. They've got the San Jose. They have 8 wins against Mountain West teams. North Carolina, 0. So you've got to, like, give –
Griggs, you're off the show. Rocco, do you want to give a real response to Joby's comments about the Mountain West and why maybe this conference is about a 5-bid, but potentially a 4-bid league right now?
Yeah, I mean, whatever happens in the tournament is separate from the selection process. So I just want to make that distinctly clear because you're not selecting based on how you assume they're going to perform. Obviously, you know, there's some criteria in the way things work now that maybe you want to negotiate in the off season. That's one thing, but the way the criteria is set up today, we can only use today's criteria. So within that, you know, Boise, you know, not a team I certainly want to defend. They're in my Dayton right now. They're in like the first four. So, you know, they've definitely got a crazy mix of results, you know, losing by double figures to Charlotte in their MTE, obviously the South Dakota State loss has been talked to ad nauseum, but they've also beat Texas A&M in that same MTE. And they punished Colorado on a neutral court, who's a top 65 team playing second best defense in the Pac-12. So, you know, it's just hard because, you know, Boise State, San Diego State, Nevada, New Mexico, they don't play power conference teams every night, but they play the next tier level of teams. And, you know, you have to give some credence to that. Utah State's the best example. Utah State's got 14 wins against the top three quads. And out of all 14, you know, there's nothing against the tournament team, as Joby pointed out. So it's hard to, you know, you have to give credit for winning that many times. You're a really good team, but.
Well, now the New Mexico wins the tournament win. They just picked up the New Mexico win. So I'm talking about
away from home against.
And you know, and I just got to give a, what's the reverse of a shout out? As bad of a thing we can on Colorado State fans for absolutely disgraceful, disgusting comments during this Utah State game they had this weekend where they started chanting to the Ukrainian
they were chanting Russia. It was a group of students, and it
they
was
deserve never to go to another game again, in my opinion. So
right, and I did like how Colorado State, the coaches and the administrators, apologized and how it was sincere and how it was accepted. It was a bad situation that I think, as a program and as a school, they responded to appropriately, in my opinion.
Dorman, here's the upcoming schedule this week. Interesting Nevada-New Mexico game tomorrow night. San Diego State at Utah State Wednesday night. Throwing UNLV even at San Diego State on Saturday as well here, maybe.
Any of these top five that Rocco just pointed out, all these top five teams in the mix for an at-large bid, anytime they're going up against one of the other ones, it's going to be huge. Because I don't see five getting in, and four might be too many as well. So every time you play one of your top five, it is enormous from here on out.
Of course, the game, Griggs, that you're going to be watching is tomorrow night, Colorado State Air Force.
Yes, I mean, it's a huge front range. and I don't mind. I just don't understand why Joby has so much against the conference that is half of the front range.
Well, yeah, I mean. One last pro, I would add, of any of the leagues that we discuss on this show, nobody has tougher travel than the Mountain West. I mean, it's brutal. There's so many different atmospheres and climates, packed arenas everywhere. It's hard to win on the road. So they do deserve to get credit if you can pull off a road win in the league.
Rocco, will you say the same
thing? First, I thought Griggs was going to highlight. Griggs was going to highlight.
Rutgers and UCLA will be flying on charter planes and not playing in altitude, so I don't feel bad for them.
Okay. On that note, let's go ahead and pull this down here. Let's move into the final thoughts. We are not discussing Florida Atlantic, who we've discussed the last few weeks. Their loss to UAB dropped them out of the top 25. You want to hear about them? Tune in Wednesday night, Under the Radar. But let's go to final thoughts here. Salika, I know you just wanted to make comments. So I'll start with you tonight.
Well, it wasn't because I wanted to highlight Silicon Valley versus the San Joaquin Valley tomorrow night in the Mountain West. But I wanted to get back to our good buddy Jim Boeheim, who apparently after a big win by Syracuse at Boston College, which is more than I can say for Clemson, by the way. apparently talking about a potential 49th season as coach of the Orange. Apparently he wanted to somehow go off on a tangent about, Pitt bought a team, Wake bought a team, Miami bought a team, because we all know the Orange are as pure as a white snow, as I'm sure our good friend Lee Delvecchio / Zach will point out.
Yeah.
Oh, Jim. Dorman.
Yeah, I just noticed that come mid-February, as we are here, and from the rest of the season, there is just so many teams that are picking it up, whether you're desperate, whether you're sitting in that bubble area, whether you're going for those conference championship levels. These games just become a notch more important. The intensity is up, and the focus of this country, of the sports fans, is now on college basketball. From here on out, it just is fantastic, and that's why I love this game.
Absolutely couldn't agree with you more. Joby.
By the way, as what Randy Forbes has Forbes from responded, I don't have a single kid on NIL. Not a single one. I mean, it's just all weird, Yeah. Those Wake Forest Demon Deacons. Yeah, they really pay well. but the on that note, it really is great. And Dorman kind of hit on that. My point is, it's great seeing college basketball. And what I'm noticing is people are finally starting to wake up. Maybe it took two straight national titles to do it, but people are finally waking up and saying, you know, that Big 12 conference, it's pretty good. You're actually hearing people talk about it on a regular basis. And as such, that filters through. That's going to filter through, like we said, right now, all of us who would put together a bracket would have six protected seeds out of only 16 spots. So think about that for a second. But also, this leads to, even with Texas losing right now tonight, the winner of the Big 12, if there is an undisputed regular season winner of the Big 12, I do not see how they don't grab that fourth and one seed. Whether it be Texas, whether it be Kansas, whether it be Kansas State, et cetera. I think that we can look forward to that. And the we're finally seeing the group think, so to speak, in the college basketball world get it right in regards to the Big 12. Because you ask that same question, it's like, oh, they always messed up in the tournament, blah, blah, blah. And they didn't. But, yeah, you would always have the skeptics. The Big 12 has now arrived.
Yeah, it's amazing. Rocco.
Yeah, so, yeah, I agree with that. And I think in the Big 12, the Oklahoma State Cowboys were talked about a little bit earlier. And, you know, just one thing they're doing a little bit differently than the rest of the league is maybe Iowa State could go in this category too. But the way they get after it defensively, it's just it's a thrill to watch. I love defensive basketball, just coming up with the different schemes to try to shut down great offenses, which Big 12 has several. You know, they held Oklahoma to under 60 nearly both times, 61 in the last game, dominated their rival both games, which is a huge deal when you're thinking about a bubble picture where both the Oklahoma schools are going to possibly take it down to the wire. Gives the Cowboys just a huge edge. But also, you know, even in a loss to Texas, they held Texas to 56, an explosive Longhorn team. So there's a bunch of results now in the league that shows that not only is Oklahoma State one of the best defenses in the league, but one of the best in the country. And that's why I think they have staying power to get into the field. And then I also will just mention, we talked a little bit earlier on the show about home atmospheres and Virginia Tech and Indiana were mentioned, of course. I think it's, you know, every year, not only now, but probably for almost all college basketball history, just sometimes I forget to appreciate just how valuable a great home atmosphere can be. And I think our friends in the desert sometimes can start to predict that ahead of time. And that's why you might see some of those shifts in the, you know, predictions. But the coaches talk about it all the time. The players feed off of that energy. When you have a Virginia Tech, Virginia game, the atmosphere is just out of control. Same with Indiana, Purdue. You look at a Florida Atlantic program and a Charleston program this year, those crowds are out of control, unprecedented for those two schools. And that's what we love the sport for. And I think sometimes when we're just analyzing all the time like we do, we forget just how big of an impact that makes on a team's season and the chances of actually beating a big time opponent.
I couldn't agree with you more. That great, great point there. And yeah. Just a side note here, as we record this, the comment about Texas being down is no longer true. They've actually just put it right together, tied this game up. So we'll see what happens. But Griggs, you want to finish the show off?
Yeah, just to further Rocco's point real quick. One of the things that I fear that I do sometimes is undervalue teams that do win on the road in hostile environments. I want to make sure that I never do that. I'm going to end today. My final thought is a little bit of a rant. And this is just a general problem around college basketball, particularly the end of games in the final minutes. Three things that happen that slow it down are timeouts, fouls, and replays. I want to talk about replay and how unbelievable annoying it is for fans and players to basically watch committee meetings that are timeouts and watch referees watch television. And then they'll, like, the way it works is two of them go to the monitor, while one waits, and then the other guy comes to the monitor and they discuss something. It takes way too long. We can play 39 minutes and not have too many problems, yet the last minute is an issue. I'm not opposed to replay because I want them to get it right, but I want to the flow of the game to keep going. And I think that there should be a time limit of 30 seconds. And one of the things that I would propose is a replay official rather than have the three referees in a situation where it takes them forever and then you put them in a situation to overrule yourself. There's pushback to that proposal because a lot of people say, well, we don't want to pay a fourth referee. That's a burden, especially on the under the radar conferences and, you know, to pay a fourth person. So I have a solution for this. We could just have a replay official do multiple games. This would have to be someone that's at a lot of games and watches a lot of games. And I think I have just the person. Let me see if I can get it. Yeah, the bracketeer himself, Rocco Miller. We're going to put an app on the bracketeer's phone. Whenever there's a dispute in a game, Rocco will be alerted, and in 30 seconds or less, he will have a call, and that call stands.
And he will be there, right?
The flow of the game. This will help the officiating of the game. He'll be at a lot of the games, but even if he isn't there, like, he's just available all of the time.
I'm in.
All right.
All right, everybody, just send your replays to Rocco.
Yes.
On that note, though, we don't need replays of this podcast, though. on behalf of Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org and All Replays, David Dorman, John Slica, Joe Beforts, and David Griggs, I'm Chad Sherwin. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Back Wednesday with Under the Radar, Thursday with the Bracket Rundown. Talk to you again real soon.